It's time now to turn our focus to Washington for our weekly spotlight on Congress. Yesterday, the House voted to increase the debt limit with a clean, no-strings-attached bill, and the Senate approved that plan earlier today. After frequent debate during the past couple of years, it will now be a year before Congress debates that limit again.
Also, with a dangerous ice storm hitting the South today, the Senate held a panel on extreme weather preparedness to talk about the role that the federal government can play in dealing with situations like that Atlanta shutdown a couple weeks back. USA Today's Congress and Politics editor Paul Singer joins us every Wednesday at this time to share his thoughts on what's going on in Congress. He tweets from @SingerNews. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Great. Thanks for having me again.
A lot of drama on the debt ceiling this week. It wasn't quite a sure thing in the House yesterday, was it?
No. We were watching the numbers as the people are voting. We're like, okay, they need about 10 more. They need about 12 more. But they did get over the hump, and the House did pass it. What's interesting is that it passed almost entirely on Democratic votes. There was only, I think, 28 or 29 Republican votes for this debt ceiling increase, including the Speaker of the House, John Boehner.
What does this mean for Speaker Boehner? I mean, he could have put the kibosh on this whole thing, right, and not allowed a vote at all.
Yeah, he could have. But then, of course, he'd be wearing that debt default around his neck if America went into some sort of economic disaster. In fact, I think, even as we speak, they have just posted my analysis of this whole thing, that John Boehner ends up being the big winner here because he gets the debt ceiling issue off the plate for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government funding has already been resolved for the rest of the year. And so between now and the 2014 elections, basically Boehner is not in jeopardy of having the House completely mess up the government and therefore completely mess up Republican election hopes in 2014.
Okay, but isn't he wearing the clean debt ceiling increase that members of his own party didn't want around his neck for letting that happen?
Yes, he is. However, the good news for him on that front is that then he can say, well, yeah, but this is all paying for old bills, and it's because the Democrats refused to cut spending, and we couldn't get it through the Senate anyway, and there's no point barking up a tree if we don't have the votes to pass it. So this just proves why we need more Republicans in Congress.
And I'd seen headlines and emails from conservative groups using the word surrender, referring to House Republicans.
And that's the thing, is that amongst the Tea Party, they see this as a surrender or a traitorous sellout. You know, they basically said 6 months ago, and Boehner had said a year ago, we're going to make some demands on a debt ceiling. We're not going to raise a debt ceiling until we get some offsetting cuts. And they didn't get them. And that is a significant compromise. But again, for Boehner's position, he may be best off losing on this issue, as it were, getting this issue done and over with for the rest of the year, and then letting the Tea Party groups and other Republicans go to the floor of the House the rest of the year and complain and call for, you know, deeper cuts, because that's the message they want the party to run on in November.
Do you reckon that any of the Republicans who voted for that increase could face a primary challenge still this year?
Well, oddly enough, one of the Republicans that voted for it, a guy named Gary Miller from California, announced today that he's retiring at the end of the year.
Mm.
So solve that.
He was safe.
Yeah. So, I mean, today in the Senate there was a really interesting chapter of this where it was not clear the Senate was going to pass this thing either. And then Senator Mitch McConnell stepped forward, the Republican leader, and voted for it. And that is where you get an interesting primary challenge, because he's already got a Tea Party group attacking him for being too moderate. He's got a Tea Party challenger in his Republican primary for re-election in Kentucky. And that was a tough swallow for Mitch McConnell to go to the floor and basically provide the momentum to get the debt ceiling bill to the floor.
Well, let's talk about some of the drama on the Senate floor. As I understand it, this is just a little while ago today, there was an attempt at a filibuster. Is that right?
Well,
or a delay?
Yeah, I'm not sure how to phrase it. You know, the Senate has gone so past normal procedure. I mean, the way this works is there's two votes in the Senate. There's one to bring the bill to the floor, and then the second to pass the bill. And that one, to bring the bill to the floor, requires 60 votes. And there was a question whether anybody was going to stand up and object, and nobody did. But they couldn't get the 60 votes. So for about an hour, we were sitting here watching the TV and watching the senators all standing on the floor, sort of jawboning each other and arm twisting going on to try and get the 60 votes they needed on that vote. And it sort of hung in the balance. Again, they needed one or two more Republican votes. And that's when McConnell particularly sort of led a small group of Republicans to come down and actually vote for the thing. That then puts it over the hurdle. Now we can bring the bill to the floor. And then, of course, when it comes time to pass the bill, that's only a 50-vote majority necessary, and all the Republicans go back to voting against it.
There was talk that someone like, say, Ted Cruz might actively filibuster, but it sounds more like a passive resistance. We're not blocking it, but we're not blocking it at the same time.
Yeah, and you know it's going to snow, right?
Right. Well, there is that.
So, yeah, no, I mean, that's not really kidding. I mean,
right.
The matter is that the senators, like everybody else, want to get out of here and go home, and they had an agreement that we'll just go down, we'll have this vote, and then, presuming it passes, we will just move on and vote on the bill, because nobody wants to spend, you know, the next 5 days buried in a snowstorm in Washington, D.C. We want to go home.
So looking ahead on this thing, now it's going to pass, the debt ceiling is going to go up.
Yep.
Were we right? It's about a year before we'll have to talk about this again?
Yeah. It'll be a year before we have to talk about the debt ceiling. That's March 2015. And then federal spending is still an issue because that deal expires in September. But it's hard to imagine, really, a major battle over keeping the government open 3 weeks or was it 6 weeks before an election. So you have to assume that one will be fairly easy to kick past the November elections. So we'll be doing neither debt nor spending for the rest of the year.
But this is a thing we keep coming back to again and again. It's put off for a year now. Is there any talk of doing this differently so we don't have to have these near or complete train wrecks every so often?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that in the past couple of months. Even, in fact, I believe it was a couple of years ago, the Senate had some language in a bill that passed that allowed the government to raise the debt ceiling by itself for a brief period of time. One of the ideas is to reverse the burden here so that the administration, the White House, would be able to raise the debt ceiling on its own with giving Congress the right to veto that with a vote against it. That would still give Congress the power to say no, but it wouldn't require them to make a painful vote to say yes. But, you know, it's just really hard to do stuff like that and to pass legislation like that. Because, again, the Republicans will say, well, we don't trust the Obama administration. And then once there's a Republican president, the Democrats will say, well, we don't trust the Republican administration. It's just hard to get that kind of change in place. But it's possible because I think there's enough frustration and concern. And even now among Republicans, they didn't really like the way this whole thing played out. They ended up getting nothing.
So they're done with the debt ceiling. Now what do they have to do for the rest of the year?
Oh, well, there's plenty of vacations to take. not much. I mean, a strong case could be made that the competitive portion of this legislative season is over. They want to do immigration. There's been a lot of talk about immigration, but Republicans have already started suggesting that they're not going to do it this year because, again, they don't trust Obama to enforce the law. There's maybe some NSA reforms that they're going to try to do. There's, you know, a handful of other bills that will probably come along a pass. But I honestly think that there's nothing else that is must pass until we get to September and we got to keep the government open. So that's one of the reasons I declare Boehner a winner in my little column this afternoon, because now they can just turn the floor over to making political points, not necessarily legislating.
And nobody's going to do anything really big and dramatic, do you think, in an election year?
Well,
never know, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the part of the issue is no one's going to do anything bipartisan. And if you want to do anything big and dramatic, it usually helps to have other people on your side. And I don't expect that to happen at this point. Now, again, I don't discount the possibility of bolt of lightning on any topic, right? I mean, if there is, you know, God forbid we need $50 billion worth of bailout money for Georgia after today's storms, you know, something like that, well, that's when Congress usually comes together in a bipartisan fashion, moves some sort of a bill. But I'm not at this moment, we are really scratching our heads. They finish these bills. They're off next week. It's 2 weeks before they're back in session at all, and they don't want to do immigration particularly at this moment. So we're not really sure what they take up next.
Well, you mentioned that weather that you've got coming, the storm, the ice storm expected in Atlanta, and the Senate today is holding a panel on extreme weather preparedness and what the federal government can do about it. What led to this happening?
You know, part of what led to it, I believe, was the headlines out of Georgia last week. Mm-hmm. But it's also something they've been working on for a while. They had a GAO has done some studies on this. This gets back to goes back to Katrina, really, and this discussion has been going on that we don't plan well for disasters, and we allow people to build in stupid places, and we are careless about protecting our infrastructure, and we don't really notice it until it gets knocked over by a windstorm, and then the whole country floods in billions of dollars to rebuild it all until it gets knocked over in the next storm. And I think this is part of what this committee was trying to get at, is there a way to do this better? And their numbers, and I'm just calling the story back up here, they said it was $1.5 trillion in economic losses between 1980 and 2010 due to poor preparation for emergency weather. And they think it's another $1 trillion in the next 10 or 15 years if we don't do better by, like, you know, strengthening our housing codes or redoing our flood maps or being more cautious about where we build and how we build in weather or disaster areas.
Is this just a mental exercise on this Senate committee's part or panel's part, or do you think something might actually come from this?
It is, I think, mostly a mental exercise. I mean, they have been revising flood insurance, the National Flood Insurance Program, over the past few years to make the flood insurance costs reflect the real risks of where you live. That's probably a benefit, although even that, it ended up hitting so hard on particularly Florida and a couple other places that all of a sudden their flood insurance rates are going through the roof, that Congress is now backpedaling and trying to sort of ease in those cost increases. There are things that the federal government is trying to do, the Senate and Congress are trying to do, to rebalance the way we reward risky behavior. But it's hard to do. There's, you know, everybody's got an interest in, you know, I don't want people building on the Outer Banks, North Carolina, until I buy my beach house there, and then I want everyone to build out there, and I want to be insured for being out there. Just kind of the way it works.
And I have, just briefly, have words like climate change or global warming been thrown around?
Yeah. Yeah, the part of the hearing today was about how climate change makes that worse. If we're going into this period, as the meteorologists tell us we are, of more extreme weather, then the need to batten down the hatches becomes more serious. Again, if we're not prepared, it doesn't matter if it's not raining. But when it starts raining, and raining a lot, and raining a lot more, then we're going to be in trouble. And their argument is it costs a lot less to prepare than it does to repair.
Paul, good luck with your weather out there, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much, Rob. Take care.
That's Paul Singer, politics and Congress editor at USA Today. He joins us this time every week